Last week we talked about a struggle that all of us are very familiar with. The Apostle Paul was so straightforward about this in Romans chapter 7. He said, I struggle. Even though he was a follower of Christ, he struggled on the inside because he knew what he should do, and for some reason he ended up not doing it. He knew what not to do, but that's the kind of thing that he'd kind of end up doing. And he said, oh, what a miserable man I am. But then he answers that, thanks be to God. We're not left alone. All of us struggle in some way or another. And all of us need help. Let's go back and look at this verse again in verse 25 of chapter 5. Since we live by the Spirit, in other words, since the Holy Spirit, if you're a believer, you're a follower of Christ, here's what happens. The Holy Spirit comes to reside in you. Take up permanent residence in you to help and guide you. He said, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Not only the Spirit of God comes within us, then we are to keep in step with that Spirit that is within us. Do you know what the number one reason is for car wrecks? I went in and checked on that this week, just doing some research. The number one reason for car wrecks is distractions. All kinds of distractions. My first automobile, I was in college, very first automobile I had, I'd picked it up, I'd just driven out, I'd not gone very far, and you know the most important thing about a car, when you get a car and you're in college, the most important thing? The radio, sure. And so I was tuning these stations that I love, getting them all in, and all of a sudden I look at the car coming right at me. I nearly wiped out my car the very first mile or two because of distractions. We now have along the highway, which I'm grateful for, called those markers are called rumble. Rumble. And you've probably gotten rumbled before. You know, you're driving along and it will tell you, hey, you're getting off the right path. But what we're focusing on this morning is what happens to those that not only rumble and hit the guardrail, but go on over in a wreck. What's our responsibility? How do we minister to people that have wrecked their life? And Paul begins to show us how that we do that. So we're to be a very redemptive community. And I've also added in there, we're to be a rumbling community. I was again thinking about this. You know that I mentioned a number of times, a number of years ago, I developed guardrails because I realized I needed guardrails for my life to help me not wreck. But then when I was working on this message, I realized, you know, you can hit one of those guardrails and probably won't kill you. It'll wreck up your car, it won't kill you, but it keeps you from going over a big embankment. And I thought, Vernon, you really need more than a guardrail. You need a rumble. You need a rumble that lets you know you're getting close to the guardrail and not mess up your vehicle. And so what I want us to look at this morning is the Apostle Paul in this last chapter of Galatians. Is that he talks about now what is our role as a redemptive community for those that hit the rumble, hit the guardrail, and go off over in the embankment, and they are wrecked. Their lives is wrecked. Three things that he shows us here. Number one, you got your journal out, ready to take some notes here. Number one is that we are to restore those who fall. And I threw this in as an extra measure. And rumble those who stumble. Now, how do we present this ministry of reconciliation and restoration? Well, I want us to look very carefully at the verse 1. We're going to just kind of take it a word at a time. But let me read it, and then we'll come back through and work on it. If anyone is caught, take note of the word caught, in any transgression, you who are spiritual, who is that? should restore, what does that look like? Him in the spirit of gentleness. And how do we do that? And then keep watch, watch out on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Caught. The first word there is caught. It literally means, you slip. You unexpectedly, it's not planned, it's not premeditated, it's a gets you like that. And that's why I say, if anyone is caught, they slip up in a transgression. The Bible is full of wrecks. One thing I like about the Bible, it is so honest and so candid. One that is so very familiar in the Old Testament is King David. One that is so very familiar in the New Testament is Peter. And they both wrecked their life. Why did David do what he did with Bathsheba? Sometime go to the book of 2 Samuel and read the story. It became springtime, and that was when the warriors would go out and continue the battle, because they didn't continue war in the wintertime. And then when it was over, then they'd go back into the battle. King David stayed home. And after his nap, walked around on the balcony, and he was distracted and slipped. He probably didn't plan on that. It is sort of, as they say, it just happened. He should have gone out to war. You know, he's probably in his 50s, and not necessarily in battle, but he would have been a very good encouragement and to give input and insight on the battle, but he stayed home. His challenge was idleness. And when we're idle, my parents always used to say, idleness is the devil's, you got it, workshop. My dad believed that so strongly. He would say, you know, you're part owner in this business now. I'm not going to be telling you everything to do. But if I see you sitting around doing nothing, you've had it. He knew the consequences of idleness, and that was what happened to David. What about Peter? Why did Peter deny Jesus, that he even knew Jesus? Because of fear and weakness. Peter was not connected and understanding his weakness. Every one of us have certain areas of weakness, and other people are not weak in that area. You know, I told you last week, I've battled with a weakness in Snicker candy bars. You know what? A guy came in the first worship service before it ever started, and he gave me a Snicker. I said, you are not going to be in charge of the Snicker recovery group. I realized my weakness. I said, I don't even know what I did with the Snicker now. I did not eat it. I will not eat it. Maybe. Do you know your weakness? Let me tell you someone that does. The devil does. And that is exactly where he's going to come to try to get you to slip. To slip. He knew how to do that with David. He knew how to do that with Peter. And he knows how to do that with you also. Now it goes on to say, anyone caught slips up, stumbles, maybe even falls. You who are spiritual. Who is that? That perfect Christian, right? No. This is one that is walking by the Spirit. In other words, they're in step with the Spirit. Don't ever try to minister to somebody that has fallen if you yourself are not walking in line with the Spirit. And the Spirit comes in to to work in our lives to fill us with his love, and so we can work with them in step with him means that we produce in our lives love, joy, peace. And then it says, now, you who are spiritual, restore. The word here, restore, is like setting a broken bone. To restore means to get it back into where it belongs. I remember being out hiking with my family, my mom. We always loved hiking out in the woods. And we were going over a fence, and she fell and caught herself with her hand. And, that hurt. But I didn't think too much about it. By the time we got back to the house, it was really hurting. And I said, Mom, I think we need to go to the emergency room. Oh, I'll be all right. No, I think, in fact, we did. We went to the emergency room. And the doctor came in, and they took a look at it. And then I can still remember, I was still in there in the room. And he took hold of her arm, looking at it gently. And then like that, he popped it back into place, and she yelled. Restoration is not always without pain. But it certainly needs to be administered gently, someone that is gentle. Let's go back to David, for example. What happened to David? A prophet by the name of Nathan came. And you would think that David would be very sensitive to the wrong that he had done. But he's a king, he'd do anything he wanted to do. And the prophet just came in and began to tell him a story. Story of a man that had all these sheep and had a guest come into town. And instead of slaughtering one of his own sheep, he went over to a neighbor and slaughtered their one and only pet lamb they had. You got about that far in the story, and David said, that man should be killed. You remember what the prophet said? David, you are the man. You're the one. If you want to see how David handled that, look in Psalm 51. And all of Psalm 51, create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a right spirit in me. And that's a confession that he made. If you want to back up to chapter 32 in Psalm, and you read about all the things that were going on inside of him, of the conviction that he had done wrong, and he begins to pour out the pain and the suffering that finally bubbled to the surface. But this gentle story, what about Peter? Remember, Peter denied Jesus. This is after Jesus' resurrection. They just come in and they're by the fireplace or fire that they built. And I can just see Jesus kind of pulling Peter over to the side. He said, Peter, do you love me? Can you pick up the tenderness of that? Peter, do you love me? It wasn't, Peter, why'd you do that? Peter, do you love me? Peter said, yes, Lord, you know. I love you. Jesus used the word agape, a self-sacrificing love. Jesus asked him the second time, Peter, do you love me? And Peter's always would answer, yes, Lord, I phileo, love you like a friend. Everybody would say love. Finally, Jesus said, Peter, do you just love me like a friend? Is that all? I don't know exactly what happened there, but I think that Peter at that point said, oh, Lord, you know. He had messed up so many times. He was afraid to say a whole lot and say, oh, God, you know. That may be you. Or it may be a friend. But it says to do it with gentleness. The ministry, and Will could speak to this so well this morning, the gentleness and the truth. This is the balance and act that we have to deal with in restoring people, is how do you balance the truth and balance that out with grace? You cannot stray off from the truth, but you blend them together. Or you might say, how do you care and not necessarily condone or condemn? How do you put those together when someone has fallen? It uses the word here, gentleness. Gentleness. Who in your family needs that touch of gentleness? You may have a family member, maybe a son or daughter, maybe mom and dad, or it may be a brother, and they've really messed up their life. Who is that in your really circle of friends? And can God use you to someone reach out to them with this gentleness? They need someone that is very straightforward, that is not straying away from the truth, but they're able to blend the truth and grace together. And a lot of times in church, we want to just give them the truth and forget grace. Other times, we want to just give them all grace and forget all the truth. You can't do either one. It has to be the careful balancing with gentleness to bring those together. And then he concludes at this and says, keep watch on yourself, because you could be the one that falls next time. Never try to work on somebody else's life without you're fully aware it could be you next time. Every time I read this, I think about Gordon MacDonald. He was a pastor in Boston, very successful pastor, written a number of books. I've had the privilege to meet Gordon and have him in a seminar. And somebody asked him where he thought that he was the strongest and would not fall. And he said, I'll tell you one place I would never fall. Guess what happened? You know, he fell in that very place. Had to leave the church, worked through a restoring process. He's written a number of books, but one of them is Restoring Your Broken World. And he just tells about that. Now he's back. He was able to come back, and not that church, but pastor again, because he was restored. Restored. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, look at it on the screen, says this: let anyone who thinks he stands take heed. You may be the one that will fall. Now let me just ask you. Are you right now, because God, there's no secrets to God, are you one that is struggling right now and maybe stumbling? And it's interesting, the last people we want to know about it would be our family or the people at church. And that's the very people that could help. Any of you here? Men, let me pick on you for just a moment. Any of you struggle with pornography? Any of you struggling at work? You're living kind of two lives. You come here and look so nice, and you go to work, and you turn into a regular demon. And you know that. Or some of you, even at home, you've got a temper. Oh. You're saying things, you destroy relationships. Some of you have people in your life, maybe family members. How do you reach out to that son or daughter that absolutely is destroyed or destroying their life? How do you do that? How do you become one that is gentle and praying for them in some way, able to reach out? Is there anyone like that in your life? Then you begin to say, okay, God, what's my next step in this? First, I want to make sure I walk in line and keep in step with God's Spirit. I need to take care of me first to make sure that I can be strong and faithful and loving and caring to reach out to them and keep in step with the Spirit. Our responsibility is to restore those. Number two, it's not only that, but bear the burden of the fallen and lift up. Lift them up. What does it mean to bear the burden? Look at it in verse 22 and 3. Bear one another's burdens. And look what happened. So fulfill the law of Christ. And if anyone thinks he's doing wonderful things, watch out. He's nothing. He's deceiving himself. But bear one another's burden. How do you live? How do you bear one another's burden? If someone has fallen, what do you have to do? Two things. You have to get close to them in a trusting, loving relationship. And sometimes it's messy. And reach down and, like someone that's fallen and broken their leg, and you reach down and pick them up. You've got to get close. You've got to get close to the fallen. Some way build a relationship of trust, and they know without any doubt you care for them more than anything else, or you will never be able to restore anybody at a distance. You have to get up close to lift them up. In a way that is very, very caring. And watch out about condoning or condemning. So, how do you do this? In an act of love. It says here, and I'm amazed at this, it said, and so fulfill the law of Christ. When we do this, and reach down and help those that are fallen, we really fulfill the law of Christ. Now, what is that? You remember the guy that came to Jesus one time and all the laws that they had in all the Old Testament? And he said, oh man, of all these laws, could you just help me? Could you boil it down to what's the most important law? And Jesus said, sure, easy. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And what? And your neighbor as yourself. And he said, when you do these things, all the law and the prophets, everything is held together by loving God and loving others. Do you ever have a little thread sticking out maybe on your shirt pocket? And you think, oh, I need to get rid of that. And you yank on that thing, what happens? The whole pocket falls off. And so what Jesus is saying, you know, it all is held together by this thread called loving God and loving others. And so, who is my neighbor? When Jesus told this man to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, your neighbors, yourself, then trying to defend himself, say, okay, who's my neighbor? Do you remember the story that Jesus told him? Here again, a story. A tender story. Who is my neighbor? Trying to justify himself. So let me tell you a story. He's talking to a Jew. He said, let me tell you a story. A man was going, there was a very treacherous route from Jerusalem to Jericho. And this man was traveling that road by himself. And he meets up with bandits and they beat him up and they rob him and they throw him in the ditch for dead. And then a Jewish priest comes along and whoop, he goes on the other side. Then Jewish Levi comes along and he runs on the other side. And then a Samaritan. It's hard for us to understand all the impact and the emotion of that. Because a Samaritan would be the greatest hated person in the world to the Jew. The two Jews had gone by, and now Jesus tells the story. It was a Samaritan, the guy you hate. He came back and lifted the guy up. And there's some things to learn from that. Let me just give you two or three. One, when there's somebody that is broken and left in the ditch, first of all, that person in the ditch is a fool. They've acted foolhardy. No one would have walked that road by themselves. the person that you want to see restored may have also acted very foolishly, and you may tend to think they're getting exactly what they deserve. They asked for it. That may be your neighbor. And secondly, there was a risk involved. The Samaritan go over there to help that man. That is, he knew that there could be he could just be a decoy and the other thieves around, and they'd come in and rob him and beat him up, and he'd also been there. He had to take a risk. And let me tell you, anytime you love someone, there's always a risk. Anytime you open yourself up to give genuine love, it can come back to bite you. You have to take the risk. With that son or daughter or mom or dad or brother or sister or the worker around you or a friend of yours. The other thing, to be a neighbor at cost. The Samaritan put him on his own animal and took him to a place to get him taken care of and paid for it, and then said, if there's any additional cost when I come back through, I'll pay for that too. It's a very costly thing at times to lift that person up and to see them redeemed. And Jesus looked at this man and said, okay, you tell me. Who was this guy in the ditch? Who was his neighbor? He could not even muster up the word Samaritan. He did not let it come out of his mouth. He just said, well, the one that helped. And that's for us too. Is that if we want to be a redemptive community, we have to be like that Samaritan. And this then, he said, who really demonstrated love? Love for God and love for the neighbor. Who was it? Who was it that really loved that guy? Well, the guy that helped him. And I submit to you today, the way we will reach our world in the world we live in today, it's not going to be done inside these walls. It's going to be what you do this week and the opportunity that you have of loving someone. Look at it. John chapter 13. Just look at it on the screen. By this all people know that you're my disciples, because you have love for one another. When they see that love of reaching out to someone that is so wounded, it makes a big impact. Number three is judge and don't be judgmental. Big difference there. He said, but let each one test or judge his own work. As you bear that load of theirs. Judge, who do you judge? Judge yourself, test yourself. How do you do that? Are you a good judge of yourself? How do you go about doing that? Let me suggest to you the main way I think that we judge ourselves day in and day out is we have to have the right kind of measurement. We have to have the right kind of standard. And that standard is given to us. This is another 3:16 verse. It's 2 Timothy 3:16. Jot it down in your journal, and let me show it to you on the screen, because I've bracketed some words of understanding this. Is all scriptures inspired by God and is profitable, and here's how it will profit us, each one of us. It's profitable for teaching, in other words, teaching what is right, for reproof, what is not right, for correction, how to get right, and for training in righteousness on how to stay right. I'm not sure that you can stay in step with the Spirit of God if you are not day by day listening. You have no rumble going on. But the Scriptures, if you allow it to speak to you day in and day out, day in and day out, it will begin to build into your conscience, and your conscience will hit those rumbles and it will wake up your conscience. And if you don't have that going on, you're very susceptible, very susceptible. This book, I think I've told you about the little boy that went into his mom and, hey, Mom, I'm 9 feet tall. Oh, you are? How'd you know? I measure myself. Well, what do you use to measure yourself? Where's the yardstick? He said, I made it myself. God's standard is not one you make up on your own. Your good is not good enough. You say, I'm good. I'm good. Who says so? How are you measuring that? And I assure you, if there's a study diet, Jesus illustrated this way. And don't be judgmental, because here's what happens at judgmental. That's where you look down at somebody else in a critical way. Matthew chapter 7. Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye? I'm sure that Jesus was humorous sometimes in some of his messages, and they kind of begin to laugh. And you got a log in your own eye. First, both of them are important. Get the speck out, but first to get the log out of your eye. I remember I get dust in my eyes around home, and a speck can hurt so much. I run in and I tell Mom, I got something in my eye. And I remember she'd take a, if you're an ophthalmologist, don't say anything. She'd take a Kleenex and make a real fine point on it. And she said, son, come over to the light where I can see. And then she'd take the point of that Kleenex and I see it. And she removed the speck. But she said, son, come over where I can see. And we have a ministry, not a judgmental. She didn't say, well, you crazy kid, how'd you get all that dust in your eyes, you know? No, she just brought me over and said, let me get where I can see. The speck and the log both need to be removed. And it says here, each bears his own load. Be very aware. I'm reading each morning. When I get up, I sit down in a chair and a right table right beside my. I've got it's an old paperback New Testament large print in a paraphrased edition. And it belonged to my grandmother. And I'd found it on the shelf, and I thought, I'm just going to start reading that. I was in 1 Corinthians this week. And when I read 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 13, all will be brought to the light like a refining fire. There are not going to be any secrets in your life when you face Christ. And I got to think about that, oh man. There's nothing going to be hidden. It's all going to be revealed. And your good may only be hay and stubble, and it's going to whoosh. And I begin to think about facing Jesus, and the only good that is good enough is God's good spirit that comes to redeem me and restore me. Would you bow your head with me for just a moment? I want you to just think about it. Have you kind of wandered away? No one knows the struggle that's going on in your life right now, but Jesus does. And you don't have any way of rumbling going on because you never read the Bible or very seldom do. And you're like the little boy that thought he's 9 feet tall because you're making up the rules of what is good and not good. And it is not good enough for Jesus because he's the one that sets the standard, not you or me. And you're hitting those rumbles quite often here lately. And some of you have a friend. Maybe they've hit the guardrail. Maybe they've wrecked. Maybe they need restoring. Their brokenness brought together. And they need someone that cares enough for them to get close to them in a trusting, loving way and lift them up. If you're one that's broken this morning, no one knows. You know, you've hit that rumble so many times. Won't you just listen to this song as Hope sings it for us again? Come out of your sadness from wherever you've been. Come brokenhearted. Let rescue begin. And just turn that over to God and say, oh God, help me to get back on course. Listen right now as she sings it.